Now, we do have, I think, Tony Leah of Unifor, Oshawa, GM. Are you there, Tony?
I am, Phil. Hi.
Hi. You're our designated hitter. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, the headline said that, I guess I could use the words of Unifor president. She said something like, a goal was set and a goal was met. If I think that's a paraphrase. Well, you're a retiree and you're a student of the labor movement and particularly auto workers. So how does this look? Well, and no one will throw in one other detail. The margin by which they agreed to this contract was 56%, if I'm right, 56, 54, something like that. Could you talk about this phenomenon? Were the goals that were set met in your view, and why the close call?
So to start with the first question, Lana Payne said that the goals were met, and I think we have to take her word for that because we weren't told what the goals were.
Oh.
As either retirees or auto workers, we didn't know what our union was demanding on our behalf. We were told that, you know, they were after wage increases, pension increases, and a couple of other things, but they didn't say how much. So it was pretty hard for us to judge whether the goals were met.
Mm-hmm.
But what is certainly obvious is that there was not a lot of enthusiasm for what was negotiated on the part of Ford workers, because only 54% of them, we're told, voted in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
As we're used to hearing, because we hear it a lot these days, it was a historic contract.
Mm-hmm.
The most historic thing I can see about it is that it has the lowest ratification vote of any contract in the auto industry that I'm aware of in the last 40 years. So it wasn't very popular.
Mm-hmm. And what's your suspicion? I saw that the Globe and Mail, in their interview, said that, of course, they talked to experts. And the experts said, well, I don't know what was on their minds. People are trying to read that, but you must have some intuition from your years with the union as to why that margin was so small.
I think there's a few things that are pretty obvious. Retirees did not have a vote, but I think that a lot of workers were very well aware of how badly retirees in the auto industry have been treated, with no increases in their pension since 2007,
mm-hmm.
while inflation has been 42% over that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at this agreement and see that there are still no increases in pensions for those people, and mm-hmm. a lot of them are really suffering, I think that takes the shine off the contract to a great degree. I think the other issue that is worth talking about is wages, because this is the part that the union leadership is bragging about the most.
Mm-hmm.
The contract provides for a 10% wage increase immediately, and then modest increases in the second and third year, 2% and 3%. So let's look at the 10%, which on the face of it sounds pretty good and better than other contracts that we've been hearing about. But the context for that is that auto workers, the people who are voting, have just lived through a contract in which they got 5% in increases while inflation was 16%
mm-hmm.
for that 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they have lost 11% of the value of their wages, and they're getting 10% of it back. So that makes it look a lot less attractive, if you understand that.
Mm-hmm. It's indicated that probably the backdrop of the UAW, the very dramatic and highly public backdrop of the UAW, really throwing down the gauntlet and asking for big numbers in every department, might be psychologically part of the short close vote.
I think so. Canadian auto workers have been watching really closely and have been really inspired by what UAW is doing and their president, John Fain, and people have been commenting on it. They appreciate the transparency that UAW has said what their demands are clearly. They've said what the offers from the companies are. They've compared them to each other every step of the way. That's really involved the members. They're out. They're either on strike or they're doing practice picketing or they're out organizing. It's really a fight by the membership. They're not just waiting to hear what the negotiators agreed to behind closed doors. So that's important. The demands are much more ambitious than the U.S. They've called for getting rid of tiers, getting rid of the inequality in the auto workers' contract, which has been a huge issue. They've called for 40% wage increases to match what the corporate executives have made over the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. They've called for immediately having temp workers become full seniority workers after working 90 days, which was not demanded or talked about by Unifor. So I think that given that kind of exciting and bold approach to bargaining, that workers in Canada can are certainly feeling that they were not, their union was not taking on the corporations in the same way. Well, I think that's a factor as well. And the final factor, I think that's been clear, pretty clear to me from talking to people and watching what people are saying, is that the process of ratifying the contract is really quite bizarre. I think most people who've been involved in unions are expect ratification meetings where the members come together, they hear the report from the leadership, and they express their point of view, whether they like it or hate it. They get to make speeches, they get to ask questions, they get to try to rally their other workers to either vote for or against the contract. But Unifor didn't allow for that.
Mm-hmm.
They had a process that was entirely online. They had a Zoom.
By the way, if I could just say, I mean, this is, people picture unions, they say, well, there's going to be a strike vote. And we're all living in a movie from the 1950s where the members all show up and the leaders stand at the front of the hall. And then they tell, okay, here's what we fought for and here's what we got. And people stand up and ask questions and they argue. And then they say, well, later in the day, we'll call a vote. Everybody read this. That ain't happening. This is this magic thing called the electronic, et cetera. And human beings go out the window.
To use an old word,
it's easier to control people, frankly.
It's a lot easier to control people. And people felt like they were being controlled. They're alienated from the process. They were turned into spectators. There's a presentation by the leadership of all the great things that are in the contract, and they're told over and over again how great it is, and they can't say anything. They have to watch it. And the only, as I understand it, the only way that they could interact at all is there's a little question window, and they could type a question into the window, and then somebody from the leadership would read the question and answer it, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very alienating process, and people were angry about that. Mm-hmm. In fact, there had been a petition that a lot of people signed saying that they didn't want to have meetings by Zoom. They wanted to have the traditional meetings that they could participate in, and that was ignored, which also, I'm sure, influenced a number of people voted.
You know, a discouraging thing I read, that it would, as somebody who studies unions or followed them for years, is that, and it's become, it was never part of the story leading up to the vote, that there was going to be a $10,000 bonus for signing, for agreeing, rather, voting yes. That's, I hate to say it, that's like hanging cheese in front of a mouse, isn't it?
A lot of workers refer to it as a bribe.
And incidentally, the Globe said 10, but I think you've told me that not everybody was offered 10. There's actually a little pecking order on how much you can get?
Most of the Ford workers would get $10,000. There's a category called TPT, or temporary part-time, and in the Ford agreement, they would get $4,000.
Uh-huh.
At Ford, as I understand it, I'm not as familiar with the situation in the Ford plants as with GM, but as I understand it, the TPT classification is mostly students who are filling in for workers who are absent. They are not actually full-time workers in a lot of cases, and that's very different at GM. But if they're just
But for them, as somebody is, I think you told me, if a student is working 2 days a week, a $4,000 bonus looks good, because he's probably thinking of leaving tomorrow anyway.
Going back to school, right?
Yeah.
Yep, I'll take my check and see you later.
And they get a vote.
Some of that, yeah, and they get a vote. And they are entitled to a vote because they are workers getting a paycheck from the company at the time of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly leaves the impression that there was a calculus of what things do we need to do to get, you know, enough, more than 50% yes votes. Well, here's mm-hmm. an easy one, right?
Now, there's also a kind of tragic dialectic unfolding here. Have to show off my language. Once they made this deal, these are Ford workers. They're Ford workers in the United States are now entering the strike. And so Ford workers here are agreeing to something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're locked in. It's done. And they're going to be working. In the old days, if Ford workers were out on strike, everybody else stayed out until it was settled. So now it's let the devil take the hindmost, I guess. But and another aspect of it is that they have to almost wish that the UAW fails. Because if the UAW comes in big at Ford, people here are going to be pretty unhappy. So there's almost a vested interest in those who sold this deal in the failure of UAW.
Yes.
I hate to put it baldly.
I think that's a problem from the point of view of wanting to have greater unity between workers in other countries around the world. I don't think that enhances it. But from the beginning of the negotiations, the leadership in Canada has said that they were going to chart their own course. I don't remember hearing that from pioneers of the labor movement. They talked about workers of the world unite and things like that, not, we're in another country, we're going to chart our own course.
Oh, yeah, this is a code of honor. Many people would say, I don't cross picket lines.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen many celebrities, whatnot, kind of startle everybody by saying, no, I don't cross a picket line.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, of course, we're on the other side of the border, but it's the same employer, and you're going to have some of the same parts, some of the same process.
Yeah, and a lot of the issues are the same. So it has an impact, and it has an impact on workers at GM and Stellantis, the other two major auto companies that are unionized, because the way that Unifor has approached this negotiations is to follow the standard practice for many years of having a pattern, a target company and a pattern agreement.
Uh-huh.
And, they've already said that now that they've settled with Ford, that becomes the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're after for workers at GM and Stellantis.
I guess just to for clarity for me, and I hope maybe the listeners are probably ahead of me on this, but the GM workers now and the Stellantis workers, they watch this very close margin vote,
mm-hmm.
and the people voting on it were in a tight window. But the Stellantis guys and the GM guys, they're not in a tight window anymore. Now they know what it is.
They know what it is, and they
and they're liable to be scrutinize it more closely, right?
They have a significant amount of time to look it over, investigate it more thoroughly, talk to each other about what it means, ask questions and try to get answers to questions. Hmm. Whereas the Ford workers had from Saturday morning at 6 a.m., the highlights were released, and they had their meeting at 9 a.m., and then the voting was open online. So they really didn't have a lot of time to give it much consideration. And there were lots of details and angles that people didn't notice right away mm-hmm. and are noticing now. I think if the Ford process had gone on another day or two, I think that the 54% might have been less than 50.
Mm-hmm.
Can't know that, but it's certainly true that for GM, which has been announced as the next target, the workers are going to have a lot more time, and they're already talking about what they like and don't like about the Ford agreement.
Mm-hmm. And they have their own culture, right? GM culture, Stellantis culture, in terms of dealing with management and what they think of them and whether they trust them and issues of that kind.
Yep. And to some extent, their own issues, because although the union's history was of trying to maintain pattern, having everybody paid the same and operate under the same basic collective agreement, in Canada, the CAW and now Unifor has moved away from that quite a bit. So the issue that I mentioned before about TPTs, they're completely different at GM, particularly in Oshawa, where Oshawa has a category, the GM has a category in the collective agreement. They're allowed to employ up to 15% full-time TPTs. We mm-hmm. talked about this before, you know, mm-hmm. The contradiction of calling somebody a full-time temporary part-time worker.
A full-time temporary part-time.
Yes. And a lot of them.
Orwell didn't think of that. You think. You're ahead of me. A full-time temporary part-time worker.
They're improving on Orwell.
Yes.
And they can have up to 15% of the workforce in Oshawa, which, you know, means
that's
maybe 400 people, 500 people. I don't know what the number is right now exactly.
It's a workable block for somebody who really wants to cause misery in the union.
And because they don't have that in Ford, to my understanding, or certainly not to the same degree, they didn't do anything about that in their contract. So if we just get a carbon copy of the Ford agreement, then we won't be addressing that issue, which I think is a real serious mm-hmm. issue. And also, those people that are full-time TPTs, I should make clear, they pay union dues, but they don't have seniority. They are not seniority workers, so they have no job security, they have no wage increases, and they don't get COLA and all of those. They don't get the same benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an issue that should be addressed, and it wasn't addressed at Ford because of whatever reason. So,
well, because I love to say it, do the full-time, part-time temporary workers have a vote at General
Motors? Yes.
They do?
They do.
I would love to have hear the spokesperson for that segment talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. I assume mm-hmm. they would like to be out of that category, wouldn't they?
Desperately.
Because it'd be a big jump in wages, for one thing.
Yep.
So I'm trying to cause trouble here.
Some, you know, causing any trouble that isn't already there.
Yeah.
They want more job security. They have zero job security because they're not seniority employees. So they're basically, could be served at any time.
And this, one thing I want to make sure to get, have been writing a lot about this, and I think you can be followed. I know you are tweeting. I'll bet there's a lot of interest right now, a lot of discussion. And I understand also that you were being asked by media in Windsor they wanted you to explain things. What were they interested in? What was on their mind?
Yes, I spoke to a journalist from CBC TV Windsor today, and that journalist was trying to get a better understanding of why the vote was so low. And he said that he hadn't been able to get a lot of information with his contacts in Windsor, but he'd seen some of what I had posted on Twitter or Facebook, and so he contacted me, and I gave him what I thought were some of the reasons that the vote was so low, and that was really the primary thing that he was interested in.
Maybe we could all agree that to say something positive about this new internet phenomenon is that perhaps the Windsor workers and others have been watching Sean Fain, the UAW leader, who makes himself available practically every day of the week to talk about what they want.
Yes, and I'm sure they are. Well, I know they are. There's a funny thing on Facebook. People can choose what image identifies them. And a surprising number of Canadian auto workers right now are using as the image to identify themselves the posters from the UAW negotiations, which are very distinctive. So they obviously like that, and they clearly like what they're seeing.
A straw in the wind, a sign of the times. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're new. This is a new situation. Well, Tony, it's very enlightening. I think I draw a largely hopeful note from what you're saying. Perhaps you don't, but that's how it kind of feels good hearing, well, that the vote was close and that now we're going to have a real contest with GM because the workers finally know what's on the table. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. And we got a little music, as I understand, and then we hope to get our other guests back.